here at the Nürburgring. It is actually alright weather at the moment. It's been spitting on the way here, but we are going to do a bit of a Q&A with Chris about what makes the Nürburgring so special and why we're actually here. So we're in the Get Speed Hospitality. How are you feeling about today, Chris?
Really good. It's my first time at the 24 Hours, which is pretty bizarre to say because it's my favourite race of the year. I have been here a couple of times for some other races, but first time at the 24 Hours, and yeah, just very, very grateful for Adam to give us the invite and come and experience it in hospitality and for them to look after us this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the food so far has been great, by the way. Loving life with what we had yesterday. But what makes the Nürburgring so special?
I know it's kind of a simple answer, but it is the sheer size of it.
How big actually is it?
It's 25 kilometres, roughly. I forget which one, because I always forget which one includes the Grand Prix Strecker. And then, oh, wait, is that the one where they take the shortcut as well? Because on the VLN, they don't do the full Grand Prix.
Right, okay.
They take a shortcut. So it's a slightly shorter version of that as well. The layout that is run for the 24 Hours is unique to the 24 Hours in the qualification races.
Okay.
But also, just the Nordschleife itself. It's one of those things where it's like Monaco or it's like the TT. If they came up with it now, it would never get approval.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Because it is dangerous. It's a very narrow track. There's a couple of feet of grass and then Armco barriers that line the whole circuit. So you are on an absolute knife edge the whole way around the lap. And the elevation change makes it particularly impressive as well.
300 meters.
300 meters of elevation change from top to bottom, so 1,000 feet. I think it was described to me by one driver as the world's only three-dimensional circuit.
I like that.
Where it's a proper roller coaster. And I think the place as well that we're in, the Eifel region, because it's absolutely gorgeous. Just it's greenery for miles on end, and that's why we call it the Green Hell.
Ah, okay, that makes sense now. So obviously this is my first time watching this race. What are some key points that you think I should be looking out for?
I think you can't treat it like any other kind of endurance race. The Nürburgring operates its own lawless values in a sense, in that yes, we run GT3 cars here, but they're homologated to slightly different specifications called SP9. But you know, you've got GT3 cars racing in the same place as a Dacia.
How does that even come up? Like, how does that even happen? Why are they allowed to do that?
So the Nürburgring 24 Hours was built on the principle of kind of a rung what you brung event.
Okay.
It was supposed to embrace diversity in the cars. I mean, there's one story of somebody bringing his taxi and competing in the Nürburgring 24 Hours, and it had something like 500,000 miles on it.
Oh my gosh.
And you could come in and race it, and having those different classes as well. So yes, we embrace the modern racing technology with GT3, GT4 machinery, Cup machinery, the M2s as well, which are very popular, but also embracing the lower elements of it for more amateur races. I think that's what makes it so special.
And this is what's something that me and a few people have been trying to get our heads around. There's like Pro-Am and Silver and Bronze. Like, I never even realised there was these different categories of drivers. What do each drive, because you mentioned yesterday, like there's a whole different thing you have to do to even drive around the Nürburgring. What's that all about?
So this is the only track in the world, or one of very few, I wouldn't be able to name any others where they have this kind of system. But Max Verstappen, for example, couldn't rock up here tomorrow and take part in a VLN race, for example, because you need to have a Nürburgring license.
Right.
This track is so unique, and it has its own special challenges that it's deemed too dangerous for people to just rock up and race, especially in the higher categories as well. So you need to start off with an instructor and then go and do some laps in a road car and then do your first few races in a much lower category of car, and then you're allowed to go and compete in the higher level machinery. And for a lot of drivers, it's a great link in with manufacturers because you get these Nürburgring specialists. It's hard to name a few of them, but you do get some ones that they are almost exclusively run at tracks like this. I mean, if you think about drivers like Kevin Est, he's not just a Nürburgring specialist, but this is probably one of his biggest programs that he does with Porsche, for example.
Yeah, and obviously yesterday we watched the qualifying, which kind of confused me a bit. It wasn't quite the same as, obviously, I think there's a lot of Formula One people going to be watching this weekend. how does qualifying work here? Because it blew my mind a little bit. It took me a while to get used to it.
Yeah, it is a slightly odd system that they run here. Basically, you start off the week with qualifying one, qualifying two, qualifying three, right? Mm. These are more for the lower class of cars.
Right.
So the top class of car, it's practically a practice session.
Yeah.
So for them, it's qualifying. But we have top quali one and two, mm-hmm. right? These are for the top 30, okay. which are all going to be GT3 cars a couple of the invitational cars. And based on your performance in the VLN races and the qualification races, you can pre-qualify for the top 20 shootout,
right?
Which is top Q2.
Right.
So you have 15 of those cars. Yeah. 15 of those cars automatically get through into, we'll call it the pole shootout.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
The bottom 15 have to then fight for a place in the pole shootout through the first top qualifying session. So the top five in that session then join the top 15 in the pole shootout.
Okay.
It's very convoluted, I accept.
It is a little bit, yeah, definitely. So what would you say are the ones to watch for this weekend? Because there's a lot of talk about the Germans and a lot of talk about them, but obviously Ferrari won last year, so that was quite controversial. What do we need to look out for?
This event has traditionally been dominated by the German manufacturers. Mm. So the fact that Ferrari came here last year with a new car and practically dominated the race was very unusual. They don't seem to quite have that same level of performance this year, but I still think they're going to be very competitive. And obviously we have to talk about the Porsches. They have won every single VLN race and both the qualification races so far this year. That's putting aside their record this year so far in all the other categories in IMSA and in the other Intercontinental GT Challenge races, which this is one of now as well, and also in WEC. They are looking incredibly strong. The weather is going to play a big part in it, I think, because we have different teams running different tyres.
Right, okay.
And even between the teams between the same manufacturer. Mm. So, the Falcon team obviously is running on Falcon tyres, but most of the other cars have been running on Michelins.
Right.
And so if it does rain, that will really play into the hands of the Michelin runners, which is just traditionally it's the best wet weather tyre.
Interesting.
Out there, but they seem very quick in the dry, the Falcons as well. Who else have we got? The Mercedes, obviously, Team Get Speed. we should give them a mention. They're looking incredibly strong. Poor Adam Christodoulou's on double duty as well between both cars.
That's crazy. He said to us yesterday he's going to do about 10 hours total, was it?
Yeah, something like that.
So that's a lot of driving.
It's a lot of driving. It's a lot of trying to concentrate as well. And it's a lot of flicking between the two cars as well. Yeah. So it could be in two completely different scenarios.
You wouldn't ever do a back-to-back stint, would you? Or is that
Probably not. Okay. No. But the thing, you would get four drivers per car here normally.
Yeah. Two and a half.
And they've got three and a half.
Kind of. Oh right. Okay. Yeah.
So they've got three dedicated to each one, and then Adam sharing the two. But they're looking incredibly fast. You can never count out the Mercedes.
Yeah.
Here as well. And then the BMW suddenly rocked up yesterday, didn't they? And Max Hesse putting it on pole as well. The BMWs are suddenly looking very, very quick. Yeah, so that's what I love about it. You can't pick a winner.
This is what I was thinking, because they do qualify and everything, but it's a 24-hour race. How much does grid position in qualifying actually matter?
It can be important, especially if you don't qualify at all. Mm. There have been times where you've had to start right at the back of the grid. It's
that's 130 cars, by the way.
Exactly, it's a lot of entries, and that's a relatively small field for this race.
Really?
We've had 190 in the past.
God. But it's such a big track; it kind of
fit them in.
Itself,
yeah, you can't fit them in. That's the only reason. Someone's unhappy. What were we talking about? the qualifying.
Grid.
Yeah, so, if you don't qualify your car at all and then you get it ready in time for the race, or something, say you smash the car up the first lap in Q1, and then you have to start 130th, the problem with that as well is because there are three different starting groups as well.
Right.
So before you've even gotten your race underway, you'll be 5 minutes behind the leader.
Of course, yeah. Because the whole lap is they were doing 8.11 yesterday.
8.10 or something was pole yesterday.
That's a long time.
We might see times quicker than that depending on what the weather does.
Yeah.
As well during the race, but qualifying I think is still important. The main thing as well is that in any other endurance race, if say you lose 30 seconds to the leader because you've started 25th and you're coming up through the pack or something, chances are there'll be a safety car to bring you back with the leader. Because we've got a 25 kilometer track, there's no safety cars.
Yeah, it's
slow zones. We have slow zones. We have code 60s and code 120s, where you have a portion of the track where you'll be limited to either 120 kilometers an hour or 60.
Okay.
While you go around service vehicles or coned off bits of the track where they're recovering cars. So you can't rely on a safety car to be brought back into the race. If there's a red flag, that's really your only hope. But the only way this race gets red flagged is through inclement weather.
Right, got you. Okay, so why should people be watching this race then this weekend? Give us three reasons why we should be watching this race.
Totally unique.
Yeah.
Nothing else like it in the world. Good fun.
Yeah.
I think it's very competitive, lots of action, and the diversity of cars.
Love that.
As well. If you want to see bravery, then you watch these guys lap in traffic and then putting moves on. I mean, I was showing you earlier Kevin S pass on the grass from 2018.
I don't know how that's allowed. Major track limits in my opinion, but cool. Well, the race kicks off at 4 o'clock European time, so we'll get it underway.